Ever since the original Penn Station was demolished more than 50 years ago and replaced by a crowded and difficult-to-navigate underground maze, politicians and planners have been trying to come up with a way to make the station more functional and welcoming. Last month, Governor Andrew Cuomo unveiled his plan, which would move some of the station's operations into the James A. Farley General Post Office across 8th Avenue. The editors of the New York Times and the paper's architecture critic, Michael Kimmelman, asked architect Vishan Chakrabarty, founder of the Practice for Architecture and Urbanism and professor at Columbia University, to come up with a counterproposal, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today to tell us about it. Hi.
Hi.
Michael, this seems like an unusual move for the Times. Why did you and the editors feel that it was necessary to come up with a plan that's different from Governor Cuomo's?
Well, first of all, I think we want to be out there on an issue that's central to the lives of millions of people. And we wanted to borrow the expertise of somebody who's been thinking about this for many years, which Vishan has been doing. And we had a sense, perhaps, that the governor's proposal was not going to be quite good enough.
Earlier this year, you wrote a scathing review of the World Trade Center transit hub that was designed by Santiago Calatrava. Are you hoping to get your views into the mix before this plan actually gets built?
Well, I'd put it this way. I think this is, you know, and Vishan can elaborate on this. Look, this has been an issue for a half a century, and this is a project that's going to take a long time to unfold. And we want to, there are a lot of moving parts, and we want to make sure that before large parts of this are undertaken, which may or may not be the right direction, we've decided on the larger picture and what's best for the city and the neighborhood and so forth. So, yes, I do think that interfering in this now is a good idea.
Vishan, didn't you run the Manhattan office of the Department of City Planning under Mayor Bloomberg?
I did for about 3.5 years, and we did a lot of the planning for the West Side then.
And was the revamping of Penn Station something that you were working on in that capacity?
Actually, the Madison Square Garden site, which is much of the topic at hand, was upzoned by the Hudson Yards rezoning. And so that actually provides some of the impetus for what we're talking about. But, you know, Penn is controlled. Most of the land at Penn Station is controlled by the state, not by the city. So,
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, it's one of these. It's like the MTA. You know, everyone thinks the city controls it, but it's actually the state. And so, you know, it's really the state, and to some degree, the federal government through Amtrak that controls the station.
And where did the Dolans, who own Madison Square Garden, come into that picture?
So, the Dolans own Madison Square Garden, and they own the land that sits on top of the heart of Penn Station. Because when the station was torn down in 63, they did this very funny thing. Basically, the ownership was split at the sidewalk level between private interests above, which ultimately became Madison Square Garden, and public interest below, which was Penn Railroad that ultimately was taken over by Amtrak.
Is the plan that you came up with for the Times something that you've been thinking about for a while?
Well, as Michael knows, Penn has been a subject of my obsession for almost 2 decades now, and I think it's worth actually stepping back and talking about why Penn is so important. Because Penn is it's the busiest transit hub in the Western Hemisphere. It handles about 650,000 passengers a day, which is about 3 times Heathrow Airport, about 8 or 10 times what the Trade Center train station handles. So it's an extraordinary number of people. It's critical to the economy of the not just the city, but the region. But I think there's something even larger about it, which is, to me, its destruction and what ultimately happens to it represents whether we believe in the idea of the public anymore, whether we still believe in public space, a civic commons. And so this is why I think the station is so critical. And so this is why many architects, many people have been thinking about the future of Penn. And actually, when Michael first came back to New York to become the architecture critic, I think it was one of the first points of focus that he had.
Yeah, I would say that I had a conversation with Vishan trying to catch up, essentially, on what I'd missed when I was living in Berlin for some years. And I knew that the Penn Station conversation had been taking place for a while and thought that it had been a settled issue, which was that there would be this thing called Moynihan Station across the street. When Vishan said to me, you know, that about 25,000 people use Amtrak, and that's how many people would be using Moynihan, more or less, I did the math and realized that was less than one-tenth of the number of people who are actually using Penn Station. That wasn't a solution.
I remember talking about such a move with the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan many years ago. Why didn't his plan move forward at the time?
Well, what Michael just said is a piece of it. You know, Senator Moynihan, famously a shoeshine boy in the original McKimmy and White station, I think had a lot of romance, and it's great that he focused so much attention on the issue and the idea that we needed a dignified gateway into the city and a safe gateway into the city. The issue is that placing a train station in the Farley Building is all well and good, whether it's for Amtrak, and now they're saying it's Amtrak plus some Long Island Railroad riders. Farley was built at the far west end of the platforms that serve Penn. Those platforms are very hard to reconfigure.
They're underneath.
They run underneath 8th Avenue.
And that helped in delivering mail, too.
Precisely.
Because trains could come in with bags of mail.
That's exactly why Farley is there.
Is it still doing that?
No. No, but that's exactly why Farley was placed there, because the mail was on the west end of the trains, and so as people were using the main train station between 7th and 8th Avenue, the mail was being lifted up on 9th. But so the problem with Farley is just that it's perfectly fine as an idea for maybe as many as 20% of the people who use Penn, which leaves 500,000 people a day in the rabbit warren underneath Madison Square Garden. So it's an annex at best. It can never be the main station.
Both of the buildings, the original Penn Station and the Farley, were McKim, Mead, and White.
Correct.
Do they have any similarity in sensibility other than the fact that they were designed by the same architectural firm?
They do. Well, and it's important to say that Farley, the first part of Farley was built on 8th Avenue. It was later expanded by McKim, Mead, and White's successor firm. So the 9th Avenue piece is actually not quite the same architecture as the piece on 8th. It's interesting. We've done a lot of forensics around these buildings, both Farley and the original Penn Station. And as beautiful as they both are, they were both built with a fortress-like quality. I mean, Farley, for instance, has a moat around it, which is, you know, there are not that many buildings in the 20th century built with a moat around it.
Do we know why they put a moat around it?
Well, I've spoken to many historians about this. And there isn't a definitive sense, but I do think that when Penn Central Railroad built this entire system, amazing, built by the private sector. It was built in the cheapest land they could find in Manhattan, in what was then known as the Tenderloin. And it's interesting, the construction of Penn and the construction of Macy's led to the displacement of a lot of African-American families to Harlem, because as the island developed, black people were pushed further and further north in the island. And so you had this displacement, but my sense is that some of the architecture in the buildings is quite defensive. Similar to McKim's campus up at Columbia, where you've got these big stone walls that are trying to kind of keep the neighborhood out, if you will. And so I think one of the things we have to solve in this next iteration of Penn is how to make the neighborhood be a fluid part of the station, much like Grand Central works with its surroundings.
If I may add to that, I think this is a very key point, because much of the nostalgia for the old Penn Station that was torn down, which created the historic preservation movement,
the Landmarks Preservation Commission was founded afterward.
Yes. That's right. That has driven much of the conversation about what to do at Penn, that somehow we need to rectify this crime that was committed. And so I think part of Moynihan's idea, which was, for our listeners who may not understand this, Farley, the post office on the west side of 8th Avenue, is going to become Moynihan if it becomes a station. That seemed to sort of write.
It won't be Penn Station anymore.
I don't know the terminology, but just that was the idea, and perhaps it will continue to be something like Moynihan Penn. But the point is, that seemed, I think, to many historic preservationists like a kind of righting of a wrong, that if you take Penn and put it in another McKim, Mead, White building, somehow you will write history. But Vishon's raising what I think is a very critical point, which is that those buildings were built in a different era for a different city, expecting entirely different capacity, both for the trains and users. And what's happening on the west side now is revolutionary, really, and demands, I think, as do the people of New York City, a very different kind of station, a very different kind of place.
Do you think that it's important to have a station that's aesthetically pleasing as well as functional? When I go to Grand Central, I see a lot of people taking pictures of that wonderful interior. You don't see anybody taking pictures inside a Penn Station unless they perhaps are writing a nasty article about it.
You know, it's interesting. I've had many government officials tell me over the years that we who care about architecture are engaged in a vanity project here, that, you know, the station somehow works and that there are much bigger things that government needs to think about. And, I think that's quite wrongheaded. I think the right station would bring extraordinary value. And I don't just mean economic value. I mean social value. I mean all sorts of kind of like just dignity and the experience of people using a big public facility, I think, is important. But beyond that is, you know, there are very pragmatic things like safety. Most of the people who use Penn are transferring from the commuter lines from New Jersey Transit and Long Island Railroad into the subways. They are doing that in the lower concourse, much of which has an 11-foot ceiling. And it's an extraordinarily congested, inhumane condition that I don't think, as an architect who's worked on large, complex projects, you know, one of the first things one has to worry about is fire egress. Can people see where they're going in an emergency? Those are real issues. It's not just vanity.
And why do you mention 11-foot ceiling, which seems rather low for a building of that sort?
Well, it is. I mean, and as I say, most of the people
use the station. I wouldn't mind having a living room that had
right. But most of the station has a lower ceiling height than the studio that we can see from right here. I mean, it's really pretty extraordinary to think that that is our major transit hub.
And by the way, one of the things that does, as you know, not just that it, in smoke or, you know, it would make it very hard to see your way. But think about moving around Penn Station now. You're never really aware of where you are. It's one of the most confusing and therefore potentially frightening places to be in if you need to know where you have to get out.
Right.
How does the Hudson Yards project, which you mentioned earlier, which is currently under construction, figure into all of this? It's been described as the largest private real estate development in U.S. history, 17 million square feet of commercial and residential space in which 125,000 people will live or work. I guess it's an expansion of the Chelsea area, which has become one of the most expensive areas in New York City.
Right. It's an expansion of our commercial business district and the whole neighborhood around the High Line, and all of that is well and good. And when I was at city planning, we were very involved. I was very involved in that. And look, we did manage to extend the number 7 subway line to serve Hudson Yards. But as you said, it's 17 million square feet. It's nowhere near enough to just have that subway line. Penn Station's only 2 blocks from Hudson Yards. And I think one of the things that Hudson Yards has done is it has really magnified the extent to which the neighborhood around Penn is now a hole in a donut. That we've seen an extraordinary kind of remaking of New York City all around that hole, but for this extraordinarily lackluster neighborhood that sits right in the heart of our city where our transit hub is.
Won't the Hudson Yards buildings, when they open in a few years, add thousands of new passengers coming in and out of Penn Station?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's going to be predictions of increasing numbers of people using Penn Station, both from Hudson Yards, the general area, and just because that's the trend for using trains and mass transit in the city. So I think Hudson Yards is a piece of a puzzle that is one part of why Penn Station makes sense, both economically and otherwise. But I wanted to get back, if I might, for a second, to this issue of the aesthetics, because I think Vishal raises a very interesting point, and that is that people have criticized, I think, architects for looking at Penn Station as an opportunity to do something that's a vanity project. And I think the conversation about the station has often been very siloed. Transit people have one conversation about its utility, about the critical need to build new tunnels under the Hudson to deal with the problem of the tunnels that are existing and the increased capacity. And they are not always talking to the people who are like architects and even people, city planners. These conversations need to come together because they are not separable. They're all the same thing. We need to talk about the ways in which the numbers of people, the numbers of trains, the kind of neighborhoods we're making, they're all better served by the same agenda. And that's what really this is about.
And just building on that for a moment, I think the key issue there now is this project called Gateway, which is the introduction of two new tunnels under the Hudson. The existing tunnels are 100 years old. They were horribly damaged by Sandy.
But it was vetoed by Governor Christie.
Well, that was an earlier version called ARC. We now have, I think Secretary Fox, our transportation secretary, has done extraordinary work getting the Cuomo administration and the Christie administration to agree on a funding plan. I think we have at least a sketch of that funding plan, and Senator Schumer's been working very hard on it to get that project funded. It's critical for the entirety of the Northeast Corridor, because if one of these tunnels fail, or God forbid, both, our entire economy will go
into
a tailspin.
Yeah, that's not an exaggeration. You know? I mean, those tunnels are absolutely critical to the economy of the whole Eastern Seaboard.
But is it practical to move what we now have under Madison Square Garden into that space under the courthouse?
Well, let's take it step by step. So Gateway, if Gateway gets built, and I think it should be, it will introduce new tracks and platforms.
Oh, I said courthouse, I meant post office.
Yes. They look sort of the same. the Gateway will introduce new tracks and platforms on the blocks just south of Madison Square Garden. And so people who will be coming out of those new trains will again be in that 11-foot-high space that everyone else is in. It's unthinkable to add more people to that without doing something about the station. So the only way you can really solve that problem is if Madison Square Garden moves, because it is literally, as the Times put it 10 years ago, the manhole cover that sits on top of the station.
Is that where your plan differs from Governor Cuomo's?
Well, yes, because our plan, what it does is our plan calls for a new Madison Square Garden, most likely in the back of the Farley Building. The Farley Building is quite large. It can accommodate an arena. An enormous amount of work went into this 10 years ago.
And what did the Dolans think about that? Moving Madison Square Garden further west make it harder for them to get some of their fans
there. Well, they had agreed
to
the move. They had signed a document that said that they would move to the back of the Farley Building. It's only about 800 feet from their existing location. Mm-hmm. And that was a decade ago. And that plan was moving forward, but for the resignation of Governor Spitzer. So when Governor Spitzer resigned, basically they pulled out of that deal, which is quite understandable. There was no counterparty in government. But the facts still remain. If you can move the garden to the back of Farley, it means that in our proposal, we basically recycle the structure of the garden. But the point is that is tied to Gateway. And so I'm just going back to Michael's earlier point, which is looking at the station and new train capacity simultaneously is what's critical here. We need to think about that, the neighborhood, all of it
and
together.
And the governor's plan, I know this can be confusing to
listeners. I just have to take a little break.
Oh, sorry.
but hold that thought, okay? I'm speaking with Michael Kimmelman of the New York Times. He's the paper's architecture critic, and architect Vishan Chakrabarty. We're talking about their counterproposal for the new Penn Station, or whatever we're going to call it, and we'll be back with more right after this. And we are back with Vishan Chakrabarty, who's the founder of the Practice for Architecture and Urbanism and professor at Columbia University, and Michael Kimmelman, who is the architecture critic at the New York Times. They have come up with a counterproposal to the one that Governor Cuomo has proposed. Is the big difference the Madison Square Garden part of this, or do you have other major differences
with the governor's plan? That really is the big difference. And, you know, it's funny. I don't actually think of it as a counter proposal as much as I think of it as an addition. In other words, you can move the garden to the back of the Farley Building. You can have a train station in the front of the Farley Building on the 8th Avenue side, as the governor has proposed. And you can then use the old structure of the garden and recycle it to build the station that we've talked about. And that way you have the coverage. So, for instance, earlier you were asking about Hudson Yards. Most people who go to Hudson Yards could use the station in Farley because they're headed westward. It's still, though, the minority of the traffic. The majority are under the garden, which is why you have to do both things at the end of the day.
Now, would the platforms just easily be extended?
The platforms don't need to be extended because the center of the platforms are underneath Madison Square Garden. There's the west end of the platforms is what Farley will be using. And again, that exists today. The only true change to the platforms is coming with Gateway, which is the new tracks and platforms planned to the south of the garden.
So just if I might say, I can understand why people might be confused. You have the garden, the circle sitting in the middle, essentially, let's say. You have this question of Farley, which is to the west, which includes this plan by the governor. Then you've got this thing called Gateway, which are really these tunnels, which would now move to the south. The governor's plan does not solve the Gateway challenge. The thing is that the garden itself, it sits on top of what is essentially the center of this entire network, including for the traffic that needs to, foot traffic and otherwise, that needs to go east. So the garden, you have to see the garden as essentially the keystone of this entire site. And the question is, can you possibly find a fix what's going wrong there, what has gone wrong, without essentially dealing with the center?
And if you tear down the garden, what would you put in its place?
Well, Vishwan's plan, I think, which is not to tear down the physical garden itself and build something completely new, is to strip it down to leave the skeleton. I'll let him explain this more, but I wanted to say one key thing about it, which I can speak up for maybe in a way he won't. But I think one of the things about it is that it strips down the existing building and uses that structure, that circular structure, as a kind of pavilion, giant pavilion that spans the existing tracks and lets you open up what is now this very clotted and covered space. And to me, the sort of novelty and the kind of the beauty of the plan is that it is the opposite of a lot of these vanity projects which one has seen. It's about reusing.
Are you still going after Calatrava?
Well, it's not him alone. It's about reuse and taking advantage of what we already have, and I think it's seeing that there's already value in what we have done.
The Times article has a video showing Vishan's design, which is a transparent glass cylinder through which the Farley building can be seen.
Right. So, you know, the way we arrived at the plan, Leonard, is that we did a lot of forensics in terms of what actually happened in the 1960s. It's fascinating how they tore down the old station. They had to create a platform that protect the station never shut down. So they built all of this stuff. They demolished the old station. They built all the garden on top of it. And what we did is we tried to understand what that process meant. And it meant two things. One is that there are layers of history at the site. So when you go to existing Penn Station, sometimes you'll touch a brass handrail, which is actually the vestige of the old station. It's still from the original station. The levels below grade are still from the original station. And so there are layers of history there. And so rather than imagine this whole new thing with this kind of sort of false narrative around, you know, something that would be my idea for the station, I think instead that what the station should really celebrate is the arrival into one of the greatest cities in the world. And so when you come off a train, by reusing that cylinder and just basically putting a very simple glass skin on it and recycling the building, you not only have a much more economical, much less sort of disruptive piece of construction, but you also do this thing of celebrating your arrival in the city. So you're looking at the city when you come out, not at, you know, something that's particular to me.
What about the quality of the train service? In Grand Central, sometimes the trains are speeding along, and then they get close to the station. They get to that tunnel, and then it's suddenly 2 miles an hour, if you're lucky. What would happen here, especially with added train service?
So this is where these two issues are very much linked, of additional rail capacity and additional kind of passenger capacity. So what I mean by that is, To deal with the delays at Penn, we have to build Gateway. We have to have new tunnels. There's no way we're going to deal with the delays at Penn without those new tunnels.
Could we have high-speed rail?
Of course. But again, they need to come through new rights of way. You know, you can't do it in – we can't keep relying on the work of our predecessors. We have to do our own work here. And there is work to do. We have to build new tunnels. And we can have high-speed rail. The issue then becomes, though, that it would be unconscionable to bring new people in new trains into the same old station. It's unsafe, it's undignified, it's inhumane. And so one has to think about both at the same time. And our proposal, because of where it's situated, is exactly where you would come out if you were coming out of those new trains.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, we get back to this question that there is this relationship between the infrastructural investment we should make in the city, in the region, which involves these tunnels, and the implications of that for our health and safety and our economy in the future. You know, I think one of the big issues that's uncovered here, for all of the confusion that many people may feel about this, there's a very basic question, which is, if you have 660,000, whatever it is, people a day who come into the city, working people mostly, what do we represent as a city? Mm-hmm. How do we take care of our people? What are our values? Surely something like a train station like this, which is a symbol of the city and its values, is a representation of its aspirations, and is also a place that should take care of the people who come here to work, who pass through it, who live here. It may take money and thinking, but we should not compromise for this. This is not a small issue. It's a central piece of our city and our civic life.
There's been talk about closing the bus terminal on 42nd Street. Wouldn't that just add to the problems here?
Well, the bus terminal, the Port Authority is a not unrelated question. You're absolutely right. It's another extremely complicated one, and there were many plans that have been put forward for where they wouldn't close it. They were thinking about moving it, perhaps moving it further west, changing the configuration of it and so forth.
Move it to the old Madison Square Garden space.
farther over toward 9th and 10th Avenue, among other things. None of these plans look like they're actually practical yet. I do think you're right to say that we need to think about bus and train service together, and that we also should think about that entire area, which does include, you're absolutely right, the Port Authority just a few blocks north. But doing this to Penn Station in no way impedes dealing with and fixing what's the problem with the Port Authority.
And go ahead. You were going to say, in a letter to the New York Times after your article ran, someone proposed just rebuilding the original McKim, Mead, and White building. Would that be feasible, or would that even?
It'd be a tremendous economic challenge, because in addition to the old building occupied not just where the garden is, but where Two Penn Plaza is, which is like a million square foot building, office building on 7th Avenue. So it'd be enormously expensive. But I also would offer as an architect that, first of all, one cannot go backwards. Like, we need to move forwards as a society and understand also it's a bit heretical to criticize the old station, but the old station had issues. You know, it was really designed to get off from your train and into a car where a chauffeur would pick you up. Most of the glory of the old station was reserved for national rail riders who were quite wealthy. Commuters were never treated very well in the old station. They came in underground even then.
Are there plans to build another tunnel for cars under the Hudson to relieve congestion in the Holland and Lincoln tunnels?
No. I think we're moving away from more cars coming into our city.
We want to push
public transportation. That's clearly the way the world is headed, and so.
Except that we're seeing all sorts of problems with New Jersey Transit. Is that just a temporary situation because of the current political situation in New Jersey?
Yeah, the governor. He didn't want to invest in Gateway. He didn't want to invest in New Jersey Transit. We ran a very good investigative piece on this. I mean, New Jersey is now, you know, paying the price for Governor Christie's, total, you know, lack of concern for public transit and the people who use it. So that's not surprising that, therefore, New Jersey Transit has been having lots of problems. We need to reinvest in it as we do in Penn Station.
You know, just a note, since we're in the middle of a national election, I mean, about 70% of the population in the United States lives in these big clustered regions, Charlotte to Atlanta, Texas, California. Those people are going to, I think, politically strive for more and more transit systems that cut down on their commute times, give them a sort of dignified way to move around their regions. And I think politically, it will be perilous for politicians who continue to cut and cut and cut at transit, because we're seeing a lot of red and purple states that want that kind of transit as well.
And it's good for, I mean, you know, there have been studies shown that show that investment in public transit, for instance, in Gateway, that in New Jersey, real estate values go up in relation to proximity in direct relation to proximity to rail stations that would connect with Gateway. So the billions of dollars that would be reaped from this investment in infrastructure in New Jersey for residents there in their houses, property values, is very clear. It's not actually just a gift, say, to New York or to a few people who use the train. It's a direct benefit, a clear direct benefit for people in New Jersey.
Isn't the Farley Building still being used as a post office?
Just the front postal hall. Most of the mail sorting that went on in the back of Farley has been consolidated into another facility that's a couple of blocks away.
So this would have little impact?
No, the back of Farley is empty, and this is why it's so important to understand. Like, if you do the logical sequence, which is you really can't fix Penn Station without moving the Garden, because the Garden sits on the top of the center of the tracks and platforms, which are largely immovable. So if you don't move the Garden, you can't fix Penn. Where can you move the Garden to? Well, it's a double block facility. Right, so it's two Manhattan blocks wide, and it needs to be near mass transit. And those kinds of sites don't, you know, sort of fall off an apple tree very quickly. So you need to find that site. And the only site in town that is empty, can accommodate the Garden, is near mass transit, is the back of the Farley Building.
Alex from Greenpoint wrote to our show page, what would it take to get the governor to consider these plans? How locked in is the other design? Is their plan comparable in cost, your plan comparable in cost to the governor's?
Well, the governor's plan is primarily about creating this train station in Farley, which I understand has a price tag of about $1.5 billion. We, because we're reusing the structure of Madison Square Garden, have come up with a pretty similar price tag, which is extraordinary. This would create the largest civic space in New York City, enclosed civic space. And you mentioned earlier the train station downtown, which costs about somewhere between $4 and $5 billion. This would be about $1.5 billion. So these are relatively small numbers, given what we're talking about in terms of numbers of people we're serving. The two could be compatible. I believe that over time, it's going to become clear to the owners of Madison Square Garden that they need a new facility. Their facility is quite old. It has a lot of infrastructure problems.
So and the Knicks and the Rangers might appreciate this.
Absolutely.
And their fans.
And their fans and everyone else who uses that facility, just like people, I think, very much appreciate Barclays today. And so the notion of a new – and by the way, we should say the Garden has moved many times in its history. The reason it's called Madison Square Garden is it used to be on Madison Square –
I remember when it was on 8th Avenue and 50th Street.
Right, right.
But we've kind of run out of time, so we're going to have to leave it there. Let's hope that the governor pays some attention to you. After all, it was proposed in the New York Times. My great thanks to Michael Kimmelman, who is the Times architecture critic, and to architect Vishan Chakrabarty for being on our show today.
As always, pleasure.